following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Marvelous!
This is Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, and it's Friday!
It's Friday, gotta get down on Friday.
This is the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. The remedy for boredom has arrived. It's the People's Podcast. Let's go for a ride. Somebody's gonna get their ass kicked. Somebody's gonna get their wig split. Somebody's gonna get their ass kicked. Somebody's gonna get their wig split. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck. 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 Woo! Oh, yeah! What is going on downtown in Chinatown? Lots of stuff going on around here. Around here, we got Santino Marella coming up to talk about his life and times. Plus, we're going to play the brand new Fozzy single, Lights Go Out. People are going crazy for this song. Let us know what you think about it. Hit me up on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho or at Fozzy Rock, FOZZYROCK, and let us know what you think about the new tune, Lights Go Out. Plus, I'm going to be taking your phone calls a little later on in the show. Go check out the Twitter at Talk is Jericho, and we're going to talk today about the Loch Ness Monster. He has reappeared. I want to hear what you think is going on in Loch Ness, so check the Twitter and find the number. But before we get started,
okay, anyone that knows me well knows that I really am always been obsessed with lake monsters, more specifically the Loch Ness Monster. I can remember when I was about 9 or 10 years old going onto the Lake Ogopogo, Lake Okanagan in British Columbia, and the lake monster that was supposedly in there was called the Ogopogo. And my grandfather used to take me fishing on the lake, and we'd go into the middle of it, and then he'd stop the boat. And he'd like slap the top of the boat, like bam, bam, bam. And he'd go, Ogopogo, Ogopogo, where are you? And I remember being on the bottom of the boat, like just screaming, like, Grandpa, no, no, stop, stop. And he would take the baloney and throw it into the water and go, this is Ogopogo's favorite treat. And I was just convinced that Ogopogo would rise from the depths and eat me. He would kill me and my grandfather. And I was convinced that that's how I would die, by getting eaten by a lake monster. And my whole life I've had like a real vivid imagination about that, to the point where even when I go swimming in a lake, we live on a lake, and I can see the entire banks of it, but when I go out there on a paddleboard or on the jet ski, it still bugs me if I fall off. Like, I got to get out quickly just in case, you know, I'm going to get eaten by a Loch Ness monster or, you know, by a lake monster. So I've actually even been pitching a show about lake monsters for a while now, because there's literally like hundreds of lake monsters all around the globe, in all different, there's like 40 or 50 in the States alone. There's in Canada, UK, you know, Ireland, Russia, Japan, China. So I've been pitching this lake monster show. It hasn't gotten picked up yet, but I'm not going to give up on it. So if any producers out there are listening, pick up my lake monster show. But here we are today, and I go online and find out that, big headline, has the Loch Ness Monster been spotted on Apple Maps? Go to foxnews.com and punch in the Loch Ness Monster. And there's actually a picture from the side, from the shoreline, of like this, I don't know, it looks like some kind of a fish or something, but it's giant. And it says in the story, it's a real sighting of the elusive creature. And members of the official Loch Ness Monster fan club claim they've studied an image seen on Apple's global satellite map that shows the allegedly 100-foot-long creature. And CNET.com has reported, London Daily Mail's report says, if you zoom in on the Apple images from space, you can even see the monster's giant flippers. Now, this news has the fans of Nessie freaking out, because there hasn't been a Loch Ness Monster sighting in 18 months. Now, the legend has it that she's been cruising the area of the loch just south of Doris, Scotland, for some 90 years, but no definitive proof. But now we have some proof via these photographs from Apple Maps. Now, you know, the guy who found it says, a total fluke. I was looking at satellite images of my town, thought I'd have a look at Loch Ness. First thing that came to my head is it's the Loch Ness Monster. So there's a lot of cynics that say that, you know, it's not real and it's probably just some kind of a mock-up. But true believers like myself and the Loch Ness fan club president, Gary Campbell, happy the infamous monster is back on the radar. Last year was the first time in almost 90 years that Nessie wasn't seen at all. After Nessie going missing for 18 months, it's great to see her back. It's Gary Campbell. If you're listening to this show, Gary, hit me up on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho, because I want to know what you know about the Loch Ness Monster. Now, we have here with me in the studio an expert on creatures, all sea creatures, lake creatures, has been since he was 2 years old, and I should know because I've known him my whole life. I got Ash Irvin in the studio with me. How you doing, Ash?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So we were looking at this, and first of all, you've been obsessed with sea creatures ever since you were a little guy. I mean, you knew every type of shark when you were 2 years old. And everyone knows like a great white shark or a tiger shark, but what other kinds of sharks is there?
There's many different types of sharks. Some sharks still haven't been discovered. There will be many more sharks to come. And
Which kind is it, like lemon shark?
There's lemon sharks, there's bull sharks, there's goblin sharks, which are deep sea creature sharks. There's frilled sharks, there's many different types of sharks.
Cookie cutter shark?
Yeah, cookie cutter sharks. And mako sharks, there's blue sharks, there's whale sharks, there's bronze sharks, bronze whaler sharks.
I didn't even know there was that many sharks, and you know all these sharks, so you've always kind of been into all the sea creatures and all the different types of sharks. You love fish. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite type of fish?
Probably either a marlin or a tuna.
And when you were like three, you caught, was it a bass?
Yes, a bass. That was about as big as me.
And what'd you catch it with?
A little Tweety rod.
You have a Fisher Price Tweety rod. So you've got the magic touch when it comes to catching fish. Now we're looking at this picture of the Loch Ness Monster spotted on Apple Maps, and I of course believe that it's the Loch Ness Monster. But you looked at it and you had a couple theories. What do you think that is? What's your thoughts?
Well, I have three theories on this, and my number one theory is that it's a giant sturgeon. Now sturgeon is a type of fish which can grow very large and live a very long time. Now, this may seem very preposterous to some of you people out there. Like, how could a fish be that big?
Yeah, because they're saying it's like 100 feet long.
Yeah. How could a fish be that big? Well, I've got an answer. An average lifespan for a freshwater sturgeon is about 100 years. Could be longer, could be shorter. And they grow about 20 feet. And I know it says 100 feet, but that looks to me about, I don't know, 40, 30 feet. And
wow.
They tend to come to the top of the surface. I forget why.
Okay.
Sometimes people run over them with their boat and they break the propellers.
Wow. Now keep in mind, we're talking Ash is 10. And he said that's preposterous. Great word. And what else are we looking at? So that was your first theory is that it's a sturgeon. You said you had three. What's the second one?
My second theory is that it could be the back end of a very large creature. It could be a Loch Ness Monster, or it could be the Loch Ness Monster.
So you're saying there's a chance it could be like a plesiosaur, kind of a dinosaur?
Yes, could be. And then my third theory is kind of sci-fi, probably not true.
Well, let's hear it. It's a theory.
My third theory is that a country has placed a submarine in this lake, and to either spy on the inhabitants of the
shoreline of the people who live on Loch Ness.
Yeah, on Loch Ness, which I know that sounds a little weird, but...
Well, we're talking about...
It could also be a secret project for research or something.
Okay, so it could be... You're thinking if it's something natural that we know it's a sturgeon.
Yeah.
Or it could be, you know, kind of a, you're thinking some kind of identified creature. But when you looked at that right away, you said it's a sturgeon.
I said sturgeon.
You said, yeah. You actually, your quote was, don't get your hopes up, Dad, it's a sturgeon.
Yeah. And if you look up on Safari, Google, any place, you will probably see that if you look up bird's eye view of sturgeon off Loch Ness, you will see huge creatures, just the shadow of huge creatures, massive.
So how big do sturgeons grow?
They tend to get, like, I think the biggest ever seen was 21 feet. I could be wrong, so all you people who really like fish, I'm just saying.
If there's any fish out there, or any fish fans that are going to challenge Ash on 20 feet long, he's saying, give me a break. I know I might not be perfectly right.
Yeah.
But basically, you're saying they're big creatures.
Yeah, they could grow big. And they have a habit of jumping out of the water and knocking canoers into the lake.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, that seems like pretty like a vicious type of a thing.
Yeah, but they don't do it on purpose. They see the color of the kayaks, and then they swim up and jump out of the water, hit the kayak, overturn it. People in the kayak drown.
Wow. Yep. So what you're saying is that, you know, with all the years we've talked about Loch Ness Monster, it said 90 years, but it's been hundreds of years, that if you're seeing some large unidentified creature, that it's possible it could be a sturgeon?
Yes, it could be a sturgeon, but then again, it could be some other unknown creature that human science hasn't discovered yet, living at the depths of Loch Ness, in the depths.
Because we've seen a few of those. Remember the coelacanth?
Coelacanth, yes.
Explain to us what the coelacanth is.
Coelacanth is an ancient fish that has been alive for millions of years. It is a prehistoric creature, and
they thought it was extinct.
Yeah, they thought it was extinct, just like every other dinosaur, until somebody in Japan was netting and caught one.
Like in 1950 or something?
Yeah, 1950, and caught a live live coelacanth.
To prove that even though they thought it was gone for
ever
thousands of years, that they still existed at the bottom of the ocean. So there's still a chance there could be a plesiosaur, a form of a dinosaur, maybe aquatic dinosaur, that maybe could have found its way to Loch Ness.
Yes. That is a perfectly reasonable theory, because anything's possible.
That's right. Well, it's good to have you on, fish expert Ash Irvin. What book are you reading right now?
I'm reading Divergent. It's a good book.
You look good book. What books did you just finish reading?
I just finished reading the Harry Potter series.
Did you like those?
Yes.
What was your favorite Harry Potter book?
Probably the fourth or fifth.
Which one is that? Order of the Phoenix?
The Order of the Phoenix and the Goblet of Fire.
Okay. We have the very intelligent fish expert, Ash Irvin, and we'll keep an eye on this story. Has the Loch Ness Monster been spotted on Apple Maps? With more developments, we'll get your opinions at a later date. Thank you, fish expert Ash Irvin.
You're welcome. And thanks for letting me be on your very popular podcast. And goodbye, everybody.
All right.
This is Ash signing off for the very last time. Probably not, but you never know.
All right. Thanks to fish expert Ash Irvin for being on the show and giving his thoughts. And plus, he's my son. How smart was he? Preposterous, he used. He's 10 years old. Inhabitants? Jeez, man, he's way smarter than I was when I was a kid. And we got Santino Marella coming up. Plus, Lights Go Out, the new Fozzy tune. But first,
you're listening to Talk is Jericho.
And on the line right now, one of Italy's favorite sons, former intercontinental champion, Santino Marella is here. How you doing, my man?
Oh, fantastic. Is this the real Chris Jeringo?
It's actually Jericho, but I know you're from Italy, and sometimes you have a problem pronouncing names, but Jericho.
Jeringo.
Jericho. That's not bad. That's not bad. You know, I know.
If you break it down piece by piece, I can do it.
Yeah, it gets too quick sometimes when you try and speak too fast. I know you're still mastering the English language, but you're doing a fairly good job. I mean, you've been in the WWE now for almost 6 or 7 years or so. I think you joined back in 2007.
Yeah, this April 16 is my 7-year anniversary, and time sure does fly, that's for sure.
Well, absolutely it flies, and what a career you've had, Santino. I mean, there's so much stuff to talk about. I mean, I think probably, but I think the biggest thing right now is you're calling from a movie set, is that correct?
Right now I'm in the fancy schmancy hotel they put me in. I pick up today at 1:30, and they drive me to the set. I say one line, and I come home. That's how movie stars do it.
What movie are you working on right now, Santino?
It's Jingle All the Way 2. If you know the original one, it was from Arnold Schwarzenegger. And so I'm pretty much the new muscle guy on the block, you know, big, strong guy on the block. And I'm going to make everyone believe that I can act just like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So you're going to be like one of the new action heroes of the new decade, basically, with this movie.
Yeah, I can slide over the hood of a car. I can somersault, come up, shoot a gun. I can do anything, pretty much. And if I cannot, my stunt double can do it, so I'm not scared.
Well, that's how it works. And who else is in this movie with you, Jingle All the Way Part 2?
Well, the principal guy, that's a new word for me, principal, is a Larry the Cable guy. And he's a very funny person and a very nice guy, family guy, you know. Couple kids, a nice dog, a nice wife. He's from Nebraska, and he's very popular.
Wow, so you're actually, so it's Larry the Cable Guy and Santino Marella starring in Jingle All the Way 2.
Yeah, it's interesting because I have to work on my American accent for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's believable because, people are laughing when I do it, but it's comedy, so I'm thinking they're either laughing because I'm doing good comedy or they're laughing because maybe not believable accent. But I guess we'll see what the public thinks.
Well, I would say obviously it's because they're laughing because you're telling jokes, because your acting is probably very incredible. Now, what kind of an accent do you have to have in this movie?
I'm from North Carolina in the movie.
Oh.
And
can we hear a snippet of the accent maybe?
Okay, let me think of some lines here that are important. Okay, so there's a part where Larry the Cable Guy, his ex-wife, she got remarried.
Mm-hmm.
And this new guy, he's a rich guy, and he's embracing the role of stepdad. And he likes to become close with the kid. So he says to the kid, you're my little sugar plum. And then later, Larry is telling me the story.
And okay.
So I say to him, she really called you his little sugar plum,
hey? Wow! Did you just replace yourself with a guy from North Carolina sitting beside you? Was that really you?
No, you figured it out. That was a guy beside me.
That sounded really.
No, that was me. Double trick. I double tricked you. That was really me.
Wow! I mean, that's some good stuff, Santino. I mean, that did you have to work with a dialect coach to get that accent, or?
I believe it's called a linguist. I believe.
Okay. Well, that's what happens when you're
I worked on it for a while.
Well, when you're on a big budget movie, they have linguists on the set just to give you help and advice whenever you need it, correct?
That is true. Plus, all the experience we have at Waffle House over the years, it really helps me.
Absolutely. The number one place for wrestlers to eat is at the Waffle House on the road.
Yeah, chicken and eggs.
How was that for you moving when you first came over from Italy and kind of experiencing the delicacies of America? I mean, Italy is known for its food. I mean, people love Italian food. Was it hard for you to get used to chicken and waffles and, sliced, diced, baked and faked and all that different stuff they have?
Well, when I first came to America, I was living in New Jersey, in Paterson. So it wasn't like the South. So mm-hmm. It was like culture shock number one
mm-hmm.
was coming to America. And I found out that Greek people own the restaurants here. It's crazy to me. Back home, everybody's Italian, but here all the diners are from Greek people and Jewish people. So I found that to be very interesting. But they did have lots of Italian food, and they had lots of, American-Italian food.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't so bad. Then when I moved or started experiencing the South, that was a whole other culture. And it's nice. I like it. They're a little bit more slow, laid back, and not they're slow. Like they're slow mentally. Their pace. Is
oh, okay,
slow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
it's nice people.
Well, let's talk about your early years. I mean, we know so much about the internationally famous Santino Marella, a great performer in the WWE, world famous. But we don't know a lot about your upbringing and how you got recruited into the WWE, how you became a wrestling fan. Tell us about kind of how when you grew up in Italy, was there a lot of wrestling that you could watch there?
No, there was only one channel. that had wrestling for 1 hour, and I had to stay up like 2 a.m. on, was it Friday or Saturday? I know it was the beginning of the weekend. So either way, Friday or Saturday, 2 a.m, there was a WWF.
Uh-huh.
Back in the day. So I was, you know, I was Hulkamaniac. I love Hulk Hogan and Jimmy Snuka and British Bulldogs. I love those guys. And I used to get my sister Santina and practice all the moves on her.
Mm.
And, you know, she became quite strong because of this. But and that was it, you know. It was just a fantasy. I never believed you can do this. But my father was, he had a construction company and plus, very small one, just he used his children as labor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like also a small farmer. One side of the hill was olive trees, other side was grapes. So we make a little bit homemade olive oil and wine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it, you know. I was I did not like the construction part, so I would pretend to be very, very slow. So he would get so angry to me, he would say, "Get out of here, you son of a gun." And I could get the day off. And then I would chase this one girl named Natalia all around the town. If you saw what I saw, you'd know why I would chase her.
She was a real looker, I assume.
It was her bum. It was crazy.
Oh, Italian bums are amazing, aren't they?
Oh, my God. It was like it was doing this, you know, you say to the singer, like, come here.
Mm-hmm.
It was like making me chase her, you know.
Right, like, but something that Michelangelo would have sculpted out of rock, out of granite.
Yes.
Okay, so you were chasing her around the town. You didn't like the construction work.
Yeah, so I, you know, like every 18-year-old, I went to the military for a couple of years. That was not very good for me. I was always trying to get out of things I did not like to do, and plus there was a general. His name was Del Pinto. And, I kind of slept with his daughter at one party.
With the you slept with the general's daughter?
Well, slept, I mean, behind the shed for a couple, 2 minutes, but still, it was, technically, I was with his daughter, and, you know, he hated me forever. He made my life so miserable there in the army, so I had one last accident, and they kicked me out.
Mm.
I burned down something by accident. But anyway, the military was not for me. I was always a daydreamer, looking away out the window, thinking about greater things, bigger things, far-off places. You know, maybe I can be like a Italian Bruce Lee or something like that. I love two things, martial arts movies, Kung Fu, and WWF.
Mm.
Those are my two passions. But how can a guy like me from small village leave there and become this? It's impossible. It's just it's not possible. You just watch it on TV, and that's where you're going. That's where you're going to know it from mm-hmm. the TV. That's mm-hmm. supposed to you're going to get. But then one day, I mean, I had a part-time job. I worked Friday afternoons at this little bar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so my family was not happy because I was not working enough. This is after the army. And so one day I was watching Kung Fu movies and changing the channels, and I put on wrestling. And then my family came in and they said, "Look, someday, you know, we have to have a talk because we're not happy with the direction of your life. Your brothers, they're working. Your sisters, they're working. All you do is watch TV." And they said, "What are you going to do?" And then someone else said, "What are you going to do? Yeah, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? So much, like, yelling at me, and I got so angry, and I pointed to the TV, and I said, "I'm going to be a wrestler." Just like that.
Mm.
And then they all looked at the TV, and they started laughing, like, to the point where they walk out the room, they're all laughing, like they thought it was impossible, like it was a joke.
Right.
And I was really piss off, you know,
yeah.
That they think I can't do it. So I decided this moment, I said, "You know what? I'm out of here. I'm out of this small town." I sold my Vespa. I packed up some things I had, and I moved, and I bought a ticket to New Jersey, where I saw on the internet that there was a school from Iron Mike Sharp. He had a school in New Jersey.
Oh.
So he was a good athlete, apparently.
Yeah, what was the name of the village that you grew up in?
San Fili.
San Fili.
San Fili, Calabria, yeah.
Okay, so then you got a ticket and you flew over to New Jersey to the school of Iron Mike Sharp, Canada's number one athlete.
Yeah, how come he was living in New Jersey if he was Canada's great? I never figured that out. But anyway, he was in New Jersey.
I think he actually moved to New Jersey to try and be drafted for Vietnam. A lot of people were in America and went to Canada so they wouldn't get drafted. I heard that he actually was in Canada trying to get drafted, so he moved to New Jersey. But alas, it didn't work out, so he became a wrestler. I think that's kind of something like that is what happened.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's Iron Mike Sharp for you, as you know from training with him. So you went to his school?
Yeah, I was trying to get out of the Army. He was trying to get in
here. The irony. No. Oh.
Yeah, that's funny because we never quite did see eye to eye. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he expected some more things from me. But everything hurt me in the beginning. Everything hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hit the ropes the same place over and over again. And the place where the rope hit my back was killing me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought for sure I broke something or I tore something because that kind of pain was abnormal. And, you know, he gave me a chop one time and I left the ring. I left. I don't want, you know, like, why would you do that to me? He slapped me so hard on my chest.
Wow, yeah.
And it hurt. Then falling took me a while to do the proper, you know, break fall
mm-hmm.
to absorb the impact.
Bumps, they call them. They're called bumps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those were always pretty much hurt me a little bit in my neck and my back. But eventually, I started to get less bad, you know. And I was frustrated. I wanted to quit many times
mm-hmm.
because I thought this is not for me. You know, like, you know how to skin the cat?
Oh, well, yeah, the wrestling move, absolutely, where you get thrown over the top rope and you hold on and then you pull yourself back into the ring.
Yeah, I can kind of do it now. But that thing for me, oh, I stayed there for hours and hours trying to do that into the ring. I just couldn't get over the top.
Oh.
Those kind of things, they frustrate me so much. But, you know, eventually hard work and dedication, and I learned a lot about myself,
mm-hmm.
that when you think you can't do something, you keep practicing and keep doing it. Eventually, you can get, you know, you can do it or come closer to being able to do it. So, yeah, then that was for 2 years. And then my father was a little bit sick. He had lots of water in the lungs.
Mm.
So he used to work with asbestos. And so I went there to see what's up. My cousin called me, and they were concerned. So I don't want to, you know, God forbid something happened to my father. You know, I have to be there.
Well, yeah, especially so after the years there. He worked in the asbestos mines. I mean, that's hard work.
Yeah, he was fixing old houses, the old house, and take out the asbestos.
Yeah, that's
it's
not
asbestos mines.
Okay, sorry. Well, still not good for the old lungs, shall we say? So you head back to Italy.
Yeah, not good for the lungs.
Right. So you head back to Italy to try and take care of your old man, of your papa.
Yeah, just to say hello. It was a trip. It was like a visit.
Oh, okay.
And then my cousin Pasquale, he came, and he just smiled, showed me his hands. 2 tickets for Monday Night Raw in Milano, Italy. And he said, surprise, I'm taking you to Raw. And, you know, of course, I didn't believe it for a second. And then, you know, I inspect the tickets very closely because my cousin is a prankster. So I thought maybe he make, like, photocopy, use the printer. But they were real tickets. So, yeah, we went to Raw. And that was the night that Mr. McMahon, he made an invitation to the audience and chose me to face Umaga.
Mr. McMahon was in the ring and he said, open challenge to any fan in the audience to come in the ring. Is that what he said?
Yeah. So first he made an open challenge to anyone in the locker room to come and face Umaga.
Oh.
But no one would come and face him. Then he said, okay, how about anybody here tonight? Now I'm thinking, okay, this is probably a show. It's not real. So I didn't put up my hands. And then the guy beside me was going crazy. And the other guy to the other side of me was going crazy, putting his hand in the air. And at one time, I remember Mr. McMahon, he looked towards us. And he kind of made eye contact with the people beside me. And I thought to myself, can you imagine if he picks them? because I did not have my hand up.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to feel like an idiot. I'm the one training to be a wrestler, not these guys.
Right.
So I put my hand up too, and I pushed to the front of the group, right to the barricade, and I started putting my hand up, and he picked me. And I remember the guy beside me, one guy said, he picked you, go, go. And the other guy said, don't go, Umago's going to kill you. And so I went into the ring, and, you know, if you go on YouTube and put in Santino Marella debut, you can see exactly what happened.
And what a night it was. You went in there, and in the upsets of all upsets, you defeated Umaga and became the Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah, it was crazy. I remember when I was waking up, because I was knocked out a little bit in the ring, and Bobby Lashley was pointing to me saying, you did it, you won. I said, what are you talking about? I won. And they handed me the title. And I kind of started shaking, freaking out, like, what do you mean I won? I just woke up, you know? I was Intercontinental Champion, and my career started. They gave me a contract that night, or maybe next day. And, I had to really, you know, I wasn't finished learning. I had lots to learn still, but now I was on the road with really good guys that I can learn more from faster. Apparently, Iron Mike Sharp didn't know everything, but he gave me a good foundation, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was Canada's greatest athlete, but he wasn't the greatest athlete in the world, so there's still a lot you could learn. but after you won the title that night, I heard that there was a huge celebration back at the hotel held in your honor for being the new Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah, there was. I remember that, you know, I did not realize the kind of initiation process that there was. And somebody, who was it? Oh, it was a referee, Marty Elias.
Mm-hmm.
And Marty Elias said that tonight, you have to drink with the boys, with the older guys. And I hope you can drink kind of thing. And I was like, oh, my God, what's going on here? So I remember a long time ago, I had a drinking contest in Italy. We were drinking grappa. You know what grappa is?
Oh, no. What is grappa?
Oh, it's kind of like a moonshine, but Italian moonshine.
Okay.
It's made with the leftover stuff in the barrel from the wine. It's okay. Very, very strong.
Okay.
And I've drank that before, but I remember one time I was going to have a drinking contest with my friend Sergio, and I ate lots of pasta.
Mm-hmm.
Before.
Okay.
To cushion my stomach, and I beat him in the drinking contest. So I know how to prepare yourself. Of course, there was no pasta here. So I came back to the hotel, and what I did was I ate lots of rice. I ran to catering, and I ate white rice.
Mm.
And then they finally found me, and they said, you have to come to the bar right now. And everyone was there. I mean, for me, being a wrestling fan my whole life, here's, you know, Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, Ricky Steamboat, Michael Hayes, with the ponytail out, like the hair was down.
Which,
and
that was never a good sign. When Michael Hayes' hair was down back in the day, that meant that the beer wolf was out, which meant that Michael Hayes was ready to rock.
Yeah, he was ready to rock. He threatened to fight me. He was face to face with me, and he said to me, you think you can beat me? I'll kick your butt. And I said, hey, man, I'm just happy to be here. Please, sir, I don't want to fight anybody.
Right.
And, yeah, he was intimidating me. And apparently, so Shawn Michaels was there. And apparently, Shawn Michaels did not come down to the celebratory bar for a long time, like 7 years.
Yeah, he never came out.
So John Cena was very jealous to me because Shawn Michaels came out.
Mm.
He did not. He never had a chance to have a drink with Shawn Michaels before. So he was giving me lots of headbutts, and lots, like 100 headbutts.
Okay.
And if I didn't have a pet goat growing up, I probably would be dead. But I'm not new to the world of butting heads.
Smart, yeah.
Because of my pet goat Figaro.
Figaro,
and,
okay.
Yeah, he was a good boy.
Well,
he fought a dog before.
Oh well, yeah. He did. What did he do? What did he do?
He fought away a dog.
Oh, a dog was going to attack you, and Figaro saved the day.
Yeah, my goat. He came in and fucked him so many times. Anyway, he was a great goat. But the point is, yes, I was drinking. And I said to myself, your job tonight is to stand on this spot and just endure and survive and just stand here. So then they started with, you know, the, hey, congratulations, shots, Jack Daniels, you know, just it kept coming. But luckily for me, I had the rice. So then everybody who didn't have a chance to eat the rice was starting to get tipsy, starting to get a little bit drunk and tired. So they started going to bed. And for me, I'm having the greatest time of my life. This is Ric Flair, you know.
Right.
Having drinks with me, Shawn Michaels, John Cena. And I didn't want this night to end. So I stood there all night. And I remember it was like 6:30, 7 o'clock, and they were shutting down the place. And I was saying, hey, how about some more drinks? Because this is fantastic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of like saying, our plan is not working to make this guy pass out.
Right.
And how can I pass out? I'm just won Intercontinental Championship. You know, it's the greatest moment of my life. So the story is that they say I reversed the rib because they were trying to rib me, but everyone else was going to bed because I was not getting tired. Because I had the rice and the excitement.
Right. Smart thinking. So you ended up, you prevailed that night.
Well, I puked later, but just it was delay.
Okay.
Like the rice was just delay. Yeah, I was sick. I could not. They found me the next morning and laying in vomit. It was nothing.
It was not. But at least you were the Intercontinental Champion at the time and living up to the respect and the prominence of all the champions of the past, for sure.
Yeah, when I woke up and I saw the title in my room, and I was like, that was not a dream. That was real. Oh, my God.
What a moment for you. We are talking to Santino Marella. What a great life he's had. Excellent story. We're going to talk more with him. Plus, we're going to hear the new Fozzy single, Lights Go Out. World exclusive just for you.
Talk is Jericho.
Welcome back to Talk is Jericho. Talking to Santino Marella, the amazing night that he won the Intercontinental Championship. He became a star in one night, and you hit the ground running, Santino. You basically held the Intercontinental Championship, and then you got involved with. You've had a real string of amazing girlfriends in the WWE that started with Maria, and then there was Beth Phoenix. I mean, you've definitely gotten around with the ladies during your career.
Yeah, for some reason they picked me. I'm a little bit shy. I mean, sure, I like to make jokes and. But, you know, when it comes to serious times with ladies, I get a little bit intimidated because they're so beautiful, you know. But Maria, she liked my accent, and, you know, I liked some things on her, too. And we started dating, and I was insecure. I was not ready to date a woman of such beauty because when she's a woman like a diva, you have to share her with the world because the whole world can see her on TV and in magazines and in that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So it was difficult for me. I did not want anyone to look at her. And because where I'm from, your woman is your woman and it's very private.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then, of course, when she did Playboy, it was too much for me to handle. And I was acting a little bit irrational. And so the relationship fell apart because I was too, possessive, maybe?
Jealous?
Yeah, I was jealous for sure, but possessive and controlling or something. My therapist said a bunch of things. But anyway, it did not work.
Right. But then you hooked up with the Glamazon and formed Glamorella. And that really did work. You guys had some good energy going on there.
Yeah, that was real love. You know, we would train together, go hiking, bike riding. Mm. And if I got tired, she would carry me a little bit because she's so strong. she was great. You know, that was fantastic. It was like she just was so down to earth and low maintenance, and she was great. She was really great. But the only problem was she was really strong.
Mm-hmm.
And some people would say that she was more strong than me.
Right.
And I would say, I don't think so. I'm a grown man and I'm very powerful. And it would start to bother me a little bit, you know, because she's Jack.
Yeah.
And when I'm at the gym and I see, like, she's doing curls, you know, with a little more than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just warming up. I was going to get to the, you know, I was going to put more weight. And then someone said, look, Beth Phoenix is lifting more than Santino. And, you know, people laugh a little bit. And, of course, if I say to them, I'm just warming up, I look like an idiot, right? So,
right.
And so I tried to show her, like, sometimes we would wrestle.
Yes.
And, you know, I can beat her. I'm a man, right?
Of course.
But nobody knew this. And people would still make jokes. Yeah, you know, look at you wish you had shoulders like your girlfriend or something, you know?
Mm.
And so I kind of became a little bit obsessed with demonstrating that I was stronger and more athletic and I can beat her. And so I tried to, I guess it's insecurity. I now that we're talking, I'm realizing I'm a pretty insecure person here.
Mm.
And I believe it.
It was hard for you because, like you said, I mean, she was the Glamazon. She was a very muscular, strong woman. But you're a man, Santino. You wanted to stand up for yourself.
Yeah, I'm a grown-up, too.
Yeah.
And there's one famous picture when Beth Phoenix and I, Glamorella, we won both the Divas Championship and the Intercontinental Championship again.
Mm-hmm.
One match. Both titles were on the line. So I was knocked out. Kofi Kingston knocked me out with his kick. So when Beth Phoenix beat Mickey James, we both of us won. But again, you know, she woke me up and said, hey, you're the Intercontinental Champion. So that was the second time I won the Intercontinental Championship, not being conscious. And
that's got to be some kind of record. I mean, that's pretty impressive. You didn't even have to be conscious to win the title.
Twice. And then so the pictures are as me on her shoulders, and she's carrying me. So this is the way it's saved in the history books, that I'm on her shoulders like a little boy,
uh-huh,
a child, you know? And the only reason I won the title was because, you know, she won the title. So, you know, it gets to you. It gets to you.
Yeah.
There's pictures, that are very well-documented pictures of your girlfriend carrying you like a baby.
Right. No, I can see how that could kind of affect your mental state, especially in such a macho world of pro wrestling. I think it was around that time that you probably, I think you took a little bit of a hiatus. And that's when we talked about your sister earlier. Santina Marella came into the WWE and was actually entered into the Miss WrestleMania pageant. I mean, did you know that your sister was wanting to be a wrestler? Did you used to wrestle with her when you were kids?
Yeah. She is, she's my twin.
Oh, she's your twin. Okay.
Yeah, but she, I mean, you know, if she's probably not going to hear this, so I can talk a little bit more honestly. But she came out kind of masculine, you know? And she was teased a little bit in her life because she was a really good athlete.
Yeah.
She was the best soccer player on her school. Forget dodgeball, she'll kill you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was just a really good athlete. Okay, she had to wax her arms and stuff like that. Whatever. Mm. She got teased a little bit. But she's my twin. So I know that if she comes and wins the Divas Championship, then for sure, obviously, I can, because I'm her brother. So then I called her, and I gave her quick lessons, nothing very detailed, a couple maneuvers, because it was Battle Royal. So, you know, keep your balance low.
Okay, right.
Lift them over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And she did lots of front squats and things like this to get her balance and be able to lift the other divas. Well, sure enough, Santina wins, and she was Miss WrestleMania. So that was just huge news, not only from one small village does one guy become Intercontinental Champion, his sister becomes Miss WrestleMania.
I mean, that's incredible.
And, so I think my point was proved to the Glamazon that obviously I'm a better, stronger person than you.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's in your family too. I mean, your family blood showed that you had the talent and the strength. What is Santina doing now?
Oh, she's married. She's it came out years ago. Santino she's a lesbian.
Oh.
And she has a, yeah, no, it's okay.
Okay.
She has a girlfriend, and they have a adopted baby, and she's just enjoying being a parent. Just enjoying parenthood. It's simple.
Okay.
She's back in Italy. I mean, you wouldn't recognize her now. She put on some weight.
Oh, okay.
You know, she doesn't have time to exercise now with the baby. And she has a really beautiful little boy from Bulgaria. And they adopt him. And that's it.
Okay. All right. Well,
she's
at least
happy, yeah.
And if nothing else, she'll always have that title of Miss WrestleMania. And what an amazing title it was. Let's talk about some of the moves that you've done and some of the things that you're kind of synonymous for. Explain to us the entire concept of the honkometer.
Ah, the honkometer. Well, the honkometer was a measuring device that was, designed to calculate where I am compared to the Honky Tonk Man's title reign. So he was the longest Intercontinental Champion of all the time.
Yeah, he was for 64 weeks. He held the Intercontinental Championship.
Yes, I was right on his tails or heels.
Mm-hmm.
Right on his heels. And I wanted to document it, because if you have the foresight to realize that you are going to break the title, why not document it and later you can even release a DVD
right.
every week of how you got closer and then, of course, became history. Everything was going really well until Mr. William Regal one time kicked my head so hard that he beat me. So that kind of really extinguished the honkometer, but it was definitely a fan favorite. I mean, it was how 5 years ago now, 6 years ago?
Right.
People come up to me still and say, I wish you could bring back the honkometer.
Now, how many weeks did you go before Regal stopped your reign? Did you get to about 62 weeks or 63 weeks, or how close did you get?
Several weeks.
Okay, well, that's close. That's close. It's 12 weeks. And 1 day is what you got. I've just had my assistants find that out. So 12 weeks and 1 day.
12 weeks?
You got pretty close.
That's good.
That's really good. I mean, I think that's probably at least the sixth or seventh longest title reign in the Intercontinental Championship history. And that's something to be proud of.
Oh, that is. I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's some good stuff, you know. Let's talk also about, I mean, you do a lot of very amazing moves in the ring. You're famous for your hip toss, and your jumping headbutt is amazing. You even go down and do a split sometimes, which is something you rarely see in the ring. But you're also an accomplished speed walker. You start doing that speed walk back and forth in the ring, baby. Watch out. People, your opponents are running scared. How did you perfect the speed walking technique, Santino?
Well, I remember one time we were watching the Olympics back how I was a teenager. I think mm-hmm. I was a teenager, yeah. So we were sitting there and we watched Olympic race walking. And we were kind of laughing a little bit, saying, look at this. It's like they're walking, but they're running. It's very funny.
Right.
Look at the hips, the way they move. So why not just run?
Yeah.
But anyway, I was doing like an imitation. Saying, look at me. I'm an Olympic race walker. And apparently I did it really good. Everyone was saying, hey, you do it just like they do it on the TV. And that was, that was just for fun. But then one time that there was this, like, there's four different factories
mm-hmm.
in the bottom of the village close to the water. And these four factories, every once a year, every summer, they would have, like, a games day, festival day. Come out, barbecue, come out and do some games. And one of the events was the Olympic race walking race. I guess because some of the workers were older, they couldn't run or something.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave them Olympic race walking race. And I said, and my friend said, hey, you were good at that. Remember, you should join this race. And I said, come on. And then anyway, they convinced me. And I said, I'm going to kill these people. Look, they're old. I can beat everyone.
Right.
But then some guy said, no. There's one guy, he wins every year. He used to be a soccer player, professional from Argentina. And he's here. And you just can't beat him. I said, oh, really? So there was two heats. I won my heat.
Right.
Quite handily. And he won his heat, also quite handily. And then it was the main event. the finals.
The final heat.
Me and him. And now the circuit, the racing circuit, was a complete square, perfect square. And now I used to watch baseball on TV, so I know if you got a hit and it's a good hit, and you're going to run to second, maybe even third base, that you don't run straight to the base and then turn 90 degrees in 1 second. You have to go out a little bit and then round the corner. You have to round the corner.
Yeah.
So so in the beginning, he was standing straight on the line, and I was a little bit out, maybe 6 feet out.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone says, no, go close. And I said to myself, they don't realize the speed I'm going to generate. You can't just turn 90 degrees on a dime. So anyway,
right.
I took it 6 feet out. And then when we hit the first base or like the first marker, he went wide because of his speed. And I cut it close in tight because I was rounding it. And then I was in the lead. And then basically I would move left or right to prevent him from passing me. And just held on to the victory.
So yeah, and then you were able to take that technique and then use it in the wrestling ring, which was an amazing feat, in my opinion. You still look great when you do it. Obviously, you still remember the technique.
Well, to me, it reminds me of my victorious race. So when I go to the ring with my speed walk, my Olympic race walk, to me, I'm going to victory.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to that ring, and I'm going to become, you know, the winner of this match. And it all starts right here with this walk I do. And, you know, it gets me fired up. No, I'm not going to lie. It gets me pretty fired up. And by the time I get to the ring, I'm ready to go crazy there.
Mm-hmm. And you do. And well, let's talk about, I mean, probably the move that's most known for, the one that's really done the most for your career as far as helping you win matches, etc., is the illustrious and famed Cobra. Tell us about the Cobra. Where did you learn such a dreaded technique? I mean, that's some kind of like a voodoo, almost guru, East Indian type of a thing. How did you learn that, and what prompted you to try and start doing it in the WWE?
Well, remember earlier, I said I had a part-time job at this little bar in Friday afternoons in Italy?
Yes.
So I had this little part-time job. I was just sitting on a stool because it was a little restaurant bar.
Uh-huh.
But Friday nights they had like a little dance floor. It's very small. But they had so that was why I was there. I was kind of like a bouncer for one night.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, one night I'm sitting on a stool, you know, bored. And in walks this Japanese guy. And
wow.
I'm talking, this is Calabria. This is southern Italy. There's no Japanese people here.
Right.
So, of course, I sit up and, you know, I have so many questions about Kung Fu. I don't know where to start. And my English was worse, way worse.
Mm-hmm. And his was probably anyway, bad, too.
His was better than mine, actually.
Okay.
So I came to him and I said, excuse me, you know, io sono Santino Marella, you know, piacere, nice to meet you. And he said his name was Taro.
Mm.
And I was, that took us an hour to figure out what he was saying. But anyway, he had to spell it for me. T-A-R-O, Taro. I thought he was saying Tato. But anyway, so Taro was his name. And so we're talking, we're kind of understanding each other. And I'm, to be honest, I'm having a great conversation, and he's just a really, really intelligent man. He was a traveler.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he does, travels. He just goes around the world, travels.
Just walks the face of the earth and travels, okay?
He travels. He goes and checks out things. I don't know where he gets money from, but so Taro showed me this maneuver where he takes his right arm and transformed it into a snake, a cobra. And it was fascinating because, this arm became a snake.
Yeah.
And so he showed me this move and broke it down for me, chop the wrist, chop the elbow, turn it, put your hand under the arm, and that's it. That's all it ever was. He showed me the cobra. But Taro, there was something about, like, mystical about Taro,
because, mm-hmm.
you know, it's like he planted the seed in my brain
right.
of this move. And you know, I forgot about it for 5-6 years. And then one day I was having a match. And this is after now. Fast forward. Now I'm in the WWE.
Mm.
And I'm having a match. I believe it was with Carlito. And So he was cheating the entire match. I was getting so frustrated.
Oh.
Eventually, I got up and I said, "That's enough, you son of a god. If you want to punch me, I can punch you too." So I punched him back, bam. I punched him back, bam. He kept falling, but he was trying to get up. And anyway, one time when I punched him, by the time he got up, I put my arm out and I did the cobra. And
right.
I hit him right on the neck, right in the pressure point where Taros taught me. So if you hit someone right in the neck, there's a vein. Mm-hmm. And the vein takes the blood to your brain.
Okay.
If you stop this, it's like stepping on a hose.
Mm.
If you step on the hose, the water is going to stop for 1 second.
Okay.
So if I stop, if I hit the vein, the blood to your brain stops for 1 second, but that allows me 3 seconds to do whatever I want in that 3 seconds. Usually that's when I pin them, right?
Yeah.
So I give him a shot to the neck. He falls down, cover, 1, 2, 3. And at second number 4, he wakes up like fresh. So it's weird because
ooh,
it's one of the only maneuvers that you can beat the guy. But right after you beat him, he's pretty much...
So it's like clockwork. So, it works for 3 seconds on the nose, and then the guy wakes up right after.
Yeah, if you hit the right spot.
If you hit the right spot, that's perfect. I mean, that's all you need, right? All you need is 3 seconds.
Exactly. That's why I would laugh. I'm like, what if Taro showed me a move that only worked for 2 seconds? That would be screwed.
Yeah, you wouldn't. It'd be a false finish every time. That wouldn't be good.
It's true.
Thankfully, Taro came through, and that's become, I mean, you are like a wizard now with that move. Whenever you start going for that, you hit your elbow, and then you turn your wrist around, and then you kind of have this biting motion. I mean, it's a pretty terrifying move. It's one of the top moves in the business, and it like I said, it really, really works for you. There was another move that you used to do, or at least you would try to do, and you never really quite were able to complete it. It was called the Maserati Clutch, and that was we never got to see the Maserati Clutch, but the legend and the rumor was massive about this. Tell us about the Maserati Clutch.
Well, the Maserati Clutch was the only move I created from scratch. It was a high risk, high impact submission maneuver. I've only hit it once.
Well, it was actually, from what I remember, it was a high impact, high risk submission maneuver from the top rope, I believe is what it was.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So continue.
Yeah. I only hit it once, and the guy's paralyzed. And he's not paralyzed, but his legs are messed up pretty bad. He has 2 canes, and his legs are bad. It's a dangerous maneuver.
Wow.
So, but the thing is, it's very difficult to set up. That's what I made my mistake when I was designing this maneuver, that it's very difficult to set up. So both guys have to be standing on the top rope.
Oh.
And then I put on like a Cobra Clutch type submission standing on the top rope. And then I jump off, so we both jump off, and the person lands on their stomach.
Uh-huh.
And I still have the Cobra Clutch, but I'm landing now in a Camel Clutch.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, you can see how you know, there'd be broken legs and swollen ankles and, you know, busted toes, everything.
Yeah, so it lands. So he's getting choked out on the way down.
Oh.
Then he's landing in a high-impact Camel Clutch. It's very dangerous.
So you just choose not to use it, showing some mercy to your opponents.
Well, I tried for a long time to execute one, but in the WWE, but I had trouble. I'm not gonna lie, I had trouble executing it, and the worst part is I was bragging about it. I'm saying, wait till you see my move, right? You're gonna love my move, and I never got the opportunity to show people what the Maserati Clutch really looks like. But you never know. You never know. One day, if the opportunity is there, I still might be able to do it.
Hey, well, I'm not going to put myself in that position. There's no way. I mean, this it's probably for the best that you're not using this, because you would leave a wake of broken bones and broken dreams behind you if you ever figured out a way to really apply that Maserati Clutch in a quicker way.
Yeah, because, I mean, everyone wants to win, but I don't want to take away your ability to feed your family.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then that's fair. I mean, that's some of your Italian values shining through. Santino, before we let you go, what's your favorite match that you've ever had during your career? I mean, you've had so many, from winning the Intercontinental Championship twice from being knocked out. You have a record, a Royal Rumble record, which is another feat that's hard to beat, where you were eliminated in 1.9 seconds, which is the shortest Royal Rumble appearance of all time. So many classic Santino Marella moments. What was your favorite?
Ooh, man. You know what? Favorite moment? I mean, there was one where actually you were involved as well when we met Bob Barker.
Oh, the Price is Raw.
Yeah, Price is Raw. That was, for me, really special because I watched Price is Right as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And,
they had that in Italy. They had Price is Right in Italy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it wasn't dubbed. It was actually in English, too.
Oh, okay. Roberto Barker, I believe you called him.
Roberto, that's right. That was good. I had some good, Jack Swagger and myself, we had lots of matches
mm-hmm.
that were very good, you know. And, of course, you know, some of the best matches are not necessarily on the television.
Of course.
They're, in the live events. So I've had some really good live events, and becoming a tag team with Vladimir Kozlov, that was very, very many exciting moments because
there's
so much going on in the ring in a tag team match. You know, this guy's over here, this guy's over here, and if they have a manager or valet, there's another person to think about. So that was fun. I always like to say that my best moment is yet to come.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we're due for another miracle, and hopefully this year we're going to be able to have that miracle.
Another Milan miracle, and maybe you can become the Intercontinental Champion for the third time. One of Italy's favorite sons, and we're looking forward to seeing Jingle All the Way Part 2, starring Larry the Cable Guy and Santino Marella. Can we hear that North Carolina accent one more time?
Sure. What would you like me to say?
Wow. That is incredible. There's going to be some awards in the future for you, Santino, for this performance. I can tell. I mean,
there's some talk.
Already, before the movie's even been completed, there's already a talk of awards for you?
Well, it may not be talk, but maybe chatter.
Okay, some chatter going on. Okay. Well, Santino, we look forward to your return to the WWE, and we look forward to the movie, and we thank you for joining us today here on Talk is Jericho. Our pleasure having you on.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine.
Well,
you're Chris Jeringo, the champion of both titles.
Can you tell me, how do you say goodbye in Italian?
Arrivederci.
Arrivederci, Santino.
Yeah, if it's more, that's more like goodbye.
Oh,
like,
okay.
If you want to say formally, you can just say ciao.
Ciao, okay. Ciao, Santino. Arrivederci.
Oh, ciao.
All right, before we get to the phones to talk about the Loch Ness Monster, you heard it the other day, you're going to hear it again right now, the new Fozzie single, Taking America by Storm, one of the most added songs on rock radio in just the last couple days. It's called Lights Go Out. It's by Fozzie. Here we go.
What would you think? Let us know your thoughts at Talk is Jericho, and let us know how rockin' you think Let's Go Out is. And if you don't like it, well, I guess you can let us hear that too, but I'm just going to ignore your comments. Yeah, boy! All right, let's head to the phones and see what you guys think about what is in the depths of Loch Ness. We posted the number on the Twitter, at Talk is Jericho. I want to know what you think. Let's go to Puerto Rico. First time caller from Puerto Rico. Javier, how you doing, my friend? ¿Cómo estás?
How you doing? I'm doing great, Chris. How are you, sir?
Good, man. It's good good to hear from you down in Puerto Rico. I appreciate you listening to the show.
Yeah, it's. I'm a big fan of the show. It's the one podcast I make sure I never miss.
Well, that's great, man. Smart guy. You're a smart guy down there in Puerto Rico. Okay, let's talk about Loch Ness. There's been a lot of discussion over the last couple of days about the Apple Maps, the Apple image. What do you think is in the depths of Loch Ness?
You know, since I was a little kid, I've always been like in love with this mythology of Loch Ness and what is beneath it, like the big myth.
Yeah.
I was in middle school. I did a report for a class about, I tried to get evidence to try to prove that it actually existed.
Right. Cool.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been reading about this Apple Maps thing, and I was really, like, excited about it because, you know, one would think that with the technology that we had available now, you could like, if it was real, we would already know, right?
You think that they would have found something, but the thing is that, you know, Loch Ness is such a big lake and it's so deep that you never know. I guess that's the one thing that you can kind of hold on to in that, you know, how could it be disappearing for so long? It's because the lake is so big. But what do you think is in there?
I don't know, man. I want to believe, like, kidding me wants to believe that there is actually a huge lizard-like animal is swimming down there.
Yeah.
But you know, the adult in me, like the logic in me, says that no, maybe it's just a hoax. I don't really know.
Right.
I mean, I read that the image in Apple Maps was actually a boat going through the lake.
Well, they always say. I mean, there's always going to be the naysayers that don't believe in anything. So they'll say it's a boat or it's a vapor trail or whatever. But to me, just the fact that, you know, we get a chance to see this, and, you know, the legend lives on. That's almost good enough for me. So
year after year, there must be something to it, you know?
Yes, exactly. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And it couldn't have been that talked about for so many years and not have something strange in there. Thanks, Javier, for calling. I appreciate it. Let's go over to Atlanta with Smark Rage is his name. Is that your legal name? Is that on your birth certificate?
Allegedly, that's my legal name.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, I guess I'll call you Mr. Rage.
That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Jericho.
All right, cool. What do you think's going on in Loch Ness?
I think nothing's going on. I think somebody got creative with a Photoshop or PaintShop Pro. But Loch Ness doesn't exist.
Well, Loch Ness does exist. There is the Loch Ness. That's an actual existing body of water.
But the monster doesn't exist. There are no such thing as monsters.
Well, now, what proof do you have of that, Smark?
There's no monsters in my closet or under my bed, and I'm 35. There's never been monsters under my bed.
Well, I would hope not. If there was, you live in a different dimension or something like that. You know, there's a big difference, though, between the space that's under your bed and the space that's in the actual Loch Ness and the space that's between your ears. Absolutely. Zinger, burn! Let's head over to Charlotte in Kentucky. How you doing, Charlotte? Always good to hear from the ladies. Good, good. It's nice to talk to you today. We're talking about the Loch Ness Monster, what may or may not be in the Loch Ness. What do you think?
I think it could be possibly one of the last remaining dinosaurs.
Well, see, that's what I think, too. I think it could be a plesiosaur that somehow got into the loch through underground canals that lead to the ocean, and that there's a family of them, because obviously the Nessie isn't immortal.
But I think that there's been many of them, a number of them over the, you know, over the hundreds of years that, that the reports have been made.
I agree. I totally agree. I think that until you, someone can definitely prove otherwise, that that's my belief.
That's right. And I feel the same way, Charlotte. Unless you can prove otherwise, I'm going to go with the thought that there's something in there. And so I agree with you. Thanks for
totally.
Thanks for calling, Charlotte. We appreciate that. Let's head over to Bobby G, the Bobby G man in North Carolina. What's going on, Bobby?
Hey, you're a hard man to get a hold of on Twitter. You know that?
Well, I mean, that's what happens when you got 2 million Twitter followers. It's hard to keep up with all the messages.
You're the best. You're the best of the world, homie.
All right, man. All right. Well, where are you at in North Carolina?
Up here in Spring Lake.
Spring Lake. Okay, so Spring Lake. Has there ever been any reports of a Spring Lake monster?
No.
Okay.
But
what do you think?
Play a ghost. But to get to the Loch Ness thing, I think there's something in there, and your theory of the dinosaur.
Uh-huh.
The theory of evolution, you know, the time period. Things change by time.
Right.
And I'm thinking there is something in there, and it could be related to the Plato, like you said, the Platosaurus.
Uh-huh.
But, like you said, it ain't the same thing because there ain't no thing that can live forever. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, it would have to be a family of them.
It's got
to
be a family of them.
I mean, another hypothesis is Ash the Fish Hunter earlier in the show brought up. It could be a giant sturgeon because there are sturgeons.
Sturgeons?
In Loch Ness.
Especially that picture that came up. That could be anything. And also, you know, you can have a speck on the lens that could make something, you know, come up like that.
It could be a speck on the lens. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that would be like a smudge on the camera lens could do something like that too, I guess, right?
I'm a ghost hunter. I know about these things.
Oh, you're a ghost hunter. You're a ghost hunter?
Yes, sir.
Oh, wow. Have you ever, I don't know if you listened to our podcast with Jeff Belanger that we had. He was a ghost hunter too. Have you ever seen a ghost hunter?
Have I ever seen a ghost?
I mean, have you ever seen a ghost?
Yes.
Wow. Where did you see a ghost? Tell us about that.
I recorded ghost on EVP, electronic voice phenomenon.
Where did you see the ghost?
In plenty of places. You know, we don't go to just one place. We go like the house or business or whatever like that, wherever they need us.
Really? So you're kind of like if someone reports a ghost out in Spring Lake, North Carolina.
And they need help, we go to it.
So what do you do when you get there?
We investigate, just like any normal investigation. We set up recorders, EVPs, millimeters, stuff like that.
So have you seen some things that can't be explained?
Yes.
Wow. Like, what's the craziest thing that you've ever seen when you were trying to find a haunted ghost?
Craziest thing ever seen is I seen a doll turn in a case, hanging up on a ceiling, freely. And it going around and around and around and around and around and around with no reason at all.
Wow. Really? So something was in that room to cause
this? Something was in that room, and it wasn't the Loch Ness Monster.
Well, Bobby G, sounds like you've got some supernatural stuff going on. Very cool to hear, not only from his theories on Loch Ness, but he's a ghost hunter as well.
Hey, if you ever want me on your show, I give you some stories, man. Oh.
All right, well, we'll take down your number, Bobby G, and we'll call you back next time there's some ghosts in the news. All right, let's take one more call. Heading over to Long Island, we got Daniel on the line. What's going on, man?
Hey, Chris Jericho, I love your podcast. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome, and I appreciate you listening. And I want to know, what do you think is in Loch Ness?
Well, first of all, I just want to get your opinion. Do you think the Loch Ness Monster is real or not?
I think the monster per se, the dinosaur from another era that lives in the lake. I'm not sure, but I do think there's something in there that's out of the ordinary, only for the reason of all the different sightings that we've had over the years. There's just too many people that have seen too many weird things for there not to be something in there. What do you think?
I think there's something in there, but I don't know. It's sort of weird. It's like so many people have seen them, but it's like, nobody has really gotten like a really good picture.
Well, the picture that we saw, I don't know if you saw it from the Apple Maps, the giant 100-foot kind of apparition under the surface. I mean, you know, that was a pretty good representation of something.
Yeah, it was a pretty good picture, but I'm just like surprised nobody has like even remotely gotten close to catching it or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the one bit of information about Loch Ness is it's very expansive. It's one of the biggest lakes in the world. It's very deep. There's points in the lake where they still haven't found the bottom of it. And I actually took a tour to Loch Ness a few years ago. We had a show in Glasgow or maybe Aberdeen, Scotland, with the WWE, and I put together a little tour, rented a kind of a van, and grabbed six or eight of the guys, and we all went to Loch Ness and took a boat ride on it. And it's very choppy. It's a very choppy lake.
The waters are rough.
The waters are very rough, and there's no real banks. It's just kind of hills, like big rolling hills that go straight into the lake, which causes a lot of moss and a lot of peat to be in the water. So it's a very murky lake.
Right.
It's a very choppy lake. It's a very cold lake. It's very difficult to kind of get a handle on it. So, you know, I think all of that adds to the legend of something being in there, because it's not something you can tame. The lake itself is not something you can easily tame.
Right. It sort of reminds me of like Bigfoot, though. Like a lot of people have claimed to see Bigfoot, but it's like they've never really gotten like close to it, like any encounters with it, you know?
Well, I mean, that's the thing with all of those type of things. We've had a Bigfoot hunter on the show. He's coming up very soon. We've had a UFO expert on the show. He's coming up very soon. And the common denominator with all of these is that you're dealing with a very large space. You know, you're dealing with Loch Ness. You're dealing with you know, the galaxy. You're dealing with you know, the Pacific Northwest, for example. That's 95% mountains and woods and trees. So if there's things in there, it could be hard to find them. And that's one of the reasons why I never ever deny that there could be something in these areas, because we'd be very egotistical as a race to think that we know everything that's going on in the world and the galaxy that's so large. So thank you very much, Daniel, for calling in. And thanks to all you guys for calling. Is there something in Loch Ness? I'm definitely staying on it. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I've been obsessed with lake monsters for my whole life, and I will continue to be obsessed, and I think still one day it will be my destiny to be the first person that ever gets eaten by a lake monster on camera. Okay? So, and Ash, the fish expert, will be there to document the whole thing for his first big scoop. My dad gets eaten by lake monster by Ash, the fish expert. All right, great thoughts and hypotheses on what's going on in Loch Ness. What a show we've had. My goodness. Santino Marella, Loch Ness Monster Talk, fish expert Ash Irvin, the new Fozzy tune Lights Go Out. This has been a buffet of entertainment for you, a cornucopia of rockicity just for all of you. And I thank you for joining me here on Talk is Jericho. I know you've got literally hundreds and thousands of different podcasts you can choose. And the fact you came and hung out with me again today means a lot, brings a tear to me eye. But thanks for also using the Amazon link every time you do your online shopping. Really easy to find. Go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, then click on Talk is Jericho, and you'll see all three of my Amazon links in the UK, in the United States, and Canada. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cashola to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free twice a week. It's twice a week. And it's for free. It's twice a week. Oh, look at me. I'm Chris Jericho, and I do Talk is Jericho for you. I hope you join me next week. Yeah, there's no extra fees or hidden charges when you go to thepodcastone.com, Keep Our Podcast Free banner, and use Amazon. You're just getting your shopping done and helping me out in the process. So we'll see you next week. We got some great shows. As always, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. See you next week, and a big yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
This has been a Podcast One production. Executive producer, Norm Pattis.